welcome to a new episode of Layered Butter, a place where cinema and art collide and where we are always open to your hot takes. My name is Raf, and I'm here with my co-host, Rod.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man. Good to hear you. I know we've had a little break over the holidays, but I guess it's good to be back and, being back in a conversation with you. We have a huge episode for you guys today, and we're excited to get to it. Yeah?
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds good.
Fantastic. Now, just before we begin, we have a little bit of housekeeping we want to get into. Just a little reminder about Layered Butter and, what we have to offer for you folks in the coming year. So don't forget to visit layeredbutter.com for any up-to-date news, information, as well as our socials, that's being our Facebook, Instagram pages. And you can also join the conversation on our Discord. That's where you can find me, Rod, and all our other members as well. If you guys want to chat, talk about some of the things we talk about here or some of the upcoming issues or anything like that that we have going forward. In addition, we have our Patreon, where you can have a small piece of the Layered Butter pie by sharing your voice in the magazine and all the inner workings that go around it. Some big news, Rod. I'm not sure if you guys have been looking at our socials, especially on Instagram, Facebook. We've dropped a trailer. Very interesting one as well. So our new issue, it will be releasing very soon, but our pre-orders for our Studio Ghibli issue have launched. Nolan is getting ready to go to print. So make sure you get your pre-orders by January 31st. Then we can get those shipped out to you. And we're next step to the modern horror issue.
Awesome. That sounds exciting.
Yeah, man. It's really cool to get all of this ready to go, and we're moving through the year. So,
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Would you say that it is pronounced Ghibli or Ghibli?
You know what? I pronounce it as Ghibli, but you'll find that when we do later podcasts or anything else, I'm gonna probably say Ghibli too. I don't know. Is there a way? Do you know?
I mean, I would imagine that it's Japanese, and so the Japanese could tell us.
I guess so.
Your brother lives in Japan. Has he ever told you how to say it?
No, not at all, actually.
Maybe that's some homework for you, so we can find out.
I guess so. I guess that's something for us to reach out to. Hey, Franco, if you're listening, tell us how to pronounce Ghibli, or anyone, actually, who is of Japanese descent that knows the actual pronunciation. You can give us a shout. Talk to us on our Discord. Otherwise, without further ado, Rod, I think it's time for us to get into the episode. What do you think?
Yeah, sounds good.
Cool. All right, my friends. So welcome to the pre-show. We've got a couple of things I want to chat about before we get into the meat and the gritty of everything. But some news that happened over the last few weeks while we were gone. But one big one was Universal is releasing classic monster films for free on YouTube. And what I wanted to say is, with some of these films being some of the older ones, such as Frankenstein, Dracula, all that kind of stuff, whatever happened to about the universe, I guess the monster universe, that universe that Universal was planning? There was a couple of major stars attached to it, such as Tom Cruise, who was obviously in The Mummy. Russell Crowe, I think, started out there with Jekyll and Hyde. And Javier Bardem was cast as, I think it was the Wolfman, but not too sure. Top of my head. Oh, and Johnny Depp. Johnny Depp was the Invisible Man, right? So I guess they had all these cast members lined up, but nothing came out of fruition. But what do you think, Rod? What's your take on horror movies and this potential reboot they were attempting to do, but I guess it just disappeared?
I think there's this perception of comic books and comic book movies that they are just kind of this like dumb summer blockbustery thing where it's like, you know, not a lot of thought has been put into it. But I think that really underestimates how much Marvel Studios leaned on Marvel Comics to be able to build their shared universe. And right, and it's like these comic book people have been doing this for a long time, like introducing single characters, building up their stories. And so that every summer they have this comic book series that like manages to balance all these multiple characters and service them well and kind of keep on like propelling the bigger universe story forward. And I think when people saw how successful the Marvel Cinematic Universe was, that everyone was like, oh, we should do that, right? It's like, we have 18 characters, like, why can't we have our own version of that? And like, I just think that like people don't realize how much work goes into doing that successfully. And I think that's kind of what happened with DC at the beginning. That was like, I think, more kind of Warner Brothers mandated, studio fronted. And I think that's kind of happened with this monster universe, that it's like, just because you have a lot of characters, you do not have a shared universe. And I think that kind of what was missing. It's like, and it's also, it's like you need to kind of set your bases up well, and maybe it didn't have like that strong of a initial kickoff. And so very quickly it lost steam, I think, is kind of where I think that failed.
Yeah. I mean, looking back on it, I think their launch point was The Mummy. And I could be wrong here, because I think back then they had The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, but that was back in like 2003, 2004 with Sean Connery. Mm-hmm. And then Tom Cruise came out in The Mummy, and they announced all these big stars to part of this universe. But the foundation, I think, was pretty weak. I mean, Tom Cruise is a star, don't get me wrong, right?
Yeah.
Same with Russell Crowe and whatnot. But I don't know. I think what I wanted to look into was, okay, you have this set idea of like DC and Marvel building their, you know, their cinematic universe. Now we have these classic horror films and classic creature films that Universal was attempting to do. Do you think, outside of the shared universe kind of idea, there is still some sort of audience for those classic monster films?
I mean, I think so. Like, a lot of them speak to some very fundamental feelings that humanity has, right?
Like, we're getting deep.
They're all kind of like metaphors in their own way of like the unknown, of your like internal fears that you grow up with. So it's not like they will ever fully go out of style, I think. But it's like, at some point, if you have to keep on relaunching The Invisible Man, well, actually, The Invisible Man, I think, was somewhat decent. I haven't seen it, but I've heard not terrible.
You're talking about the Elizabeth Moss, of course, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, you know, I guess maybe your mileage may vary depending on your own. But I'm just saying, like, you know, if you have to keep on relaunching these monster universe because you don't get good ones, then like, yeah, obviously people will become disinterested because, you know, it's an investment into these big universes, saying like, OK, I'll watch 18 of your movies as long as there's good payoff. And if you keep on failing at the launch, then, you know, maybe people might be off it for a while. But like, they're resilient enough that if you revisit them later on, the audience will be there.
I don't know. Maybe let's see. Let's see how things go in the near future. And maybe by releasing these classic films, they might rejuvenate some kind of interest. And who knows? Maybe we won't see Tom Cruise again in The Mummy, but we'll get Brendan Fraser back. Who knows? But let's move on. So recently there was a trailer released through Netflix for the new Sam Levinson picture called Malcolm and Marie, starring John David Washington and Zendaya. This is a, I guess it's a bottle film with just the two of them. It's shot in black and white, and it features a couple in crisis. Now, this film has just recently broke news in terms of, you know, its marketing and its trailer. I think we have it released next month in February, just around award season. But it's getting a lot of Oscar contention. Have you seen the trailer?
I have, yeah. I don't know. It looks good. I have no criticism toward it, but I'm a bit, I guess, apprehensive of trying to call things too early in terms of like Oscar buzz or whatever, because it's kind of like a lot of movies come out and people say like, you know, this actor or this actress has a lot of buzz. And then if you don't peak at the right time, it ends up dissipating before. And now that they've pushed the Oscars almost to like close to mid-year of 2021, then I don't know how that will end up working, right? So we'll have to see. I mean, Zendaya's kind of like on a bit of a high right now. TV work. And even though she wasn't necessarily my choice for the Emmy, like, you know, good for her. And no knock against her, like, very well deserved. She just wasn't like who I thought
she was. We'll see
how it works out on the movie side. It could very well be working out in her favor too.
What's your take on John David Washington? Have you seen a lot of his work? Yeah, big fan.
I mean, he's good. I feel like does he have his dad's acting chops? Would you say, or
how do
you?
No, I mean, I don't know. I think his most extended role so far has been on Ballers, and I have not watched Ballers. right. because he's been on it for like X amount of seasons. You know, I think he's great. I think he has the charisma of his dad. I think it'll be interesting to see him in a role that's going to be, let's say, a showcase, maybe, yeah. of an extended dramatic sequence, right?
Weighing heavily on his shoulders as opposed to more.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm interested. Did you watch Euphoria when it came out, Rodrigo?
I watched the beginning of it and then kind of fell off it. Like, my thing was, it's like, is this realistic or is this like, I don't know. I haven't been young in a very long time, but I'm like, either this is real and it's stressing me out too much, or it's like fake, in which case it's becoming unbelievable. And I don't know which one is the reality, but either way, it was hard for me to get into. I'm probably too old to enjoy it.
I mean, I love Euphoria, and the reason I bring it up is because it's the same director and creator. Sam Levinson is a showrunner of Euphoria, and now he is directing Malcolm Marie, where Zendaya, obviously, they had that relationship on Euphoria. Euphoria is very, very stylized, you know. There's a lot of really awesome sequences. At the end of the season, there's this big music video moment. And there's a lot of really, really interesting choices, and that is unconventional for TV work. So yeah. I think it'll be interesting to see Sam Levinson in something different than Euphoria. We have it in black and white, so there's already some style there, but let's see what happens. I'm kind of excited. And lastly, I wanted to say, I watched a film this weekend called Pieces of a Woman, starring Vanessa Kirby, Shia LaBeouf.
I saw it.
Oh my gosh. So here's my take before we really get into it. The film itself, or Vanessa Kirby, and some of the outlets are saying that Vanessa Kirby, this is her leading vehicle. I think she did a phenomenal performance. I think she's in the running for at least a nomination somewhere in the Oscar race. Though, with the controversy surrounding her co-star Shia LaBeouf, especially with his a lawsuit with his partner, FK Twigs, I think. There is some allegations against him in terms of abuse and the way he treated his partner at the time. And it may overshadow Vanessa Kirby's, you know, performance and also work in the film. What do you think? Do you think Shia's controversy may affect the film in a negative way? Do you think it might boost it because more people will watch it because of the fact that, you know, he's such a major role in the film? What do you think?
I mean, the awards of it all is complex because it depends a lot on the effort and money. And I mean, a lot is also
producers
on the
quality. Too, right? So,
yeah. There's like an additional layer of like how much the studios are investing into the campaign behind getting them awards. And sure. So I would imagine that it is definitely complicated by having a movie where Shia LaBeouf is in. I mean, at the same time, like I would, the Academy, like it's going to be a movie that's put in front of the people that make these choices. And I think her work speaks for itself. I hope that if she doesn't make the cut, it's because they thought these five other actresses were better and not because like we're further punishing and victimizing women once again for the mistakes of men. Like that would be, it would be sucky, but it wouldn't be entirely surprising. But I really, sure. I mean, I don't know. I hope that people can see the movie and see, you know, whether or not they think her work is worth rewarding.
And, you know, I want to finish up here because I do want to get to the meat of it all. But, Rodrigo, I got to ask you, what's your feels on the film?
I really liked it. I think it tells a very painful story. It's kind of like I feel very similar about, like, say, the topic of abortion, that it's like I don't want to necessarily impose my thoughts too much because it's like sure. A lot of the film is based on the idea of like what women tell other women of how they should feel or, you know, their expectations towards these big events like birth and, you know, like what happens when things don't go ideally. Or, you know, it's like even the idea of having like a midwife versus having a birth at home or having the birth at the hospital. Like there's a lot of societal expectations on this and I don't want to include my own. But I watched it and as I finished the movie, I felt like maybe a little bit more informed as to what was going behind the scene for one particular story, right? So if I take that away from a movie, I think that's enjoyable enough. I think Vanessa Kirby was good. I think Ellen Burstyn was better.
Oh, interesting. I think Ellen Burstyn will also potentially break into the Oscar race. But Vanessa Kirby, for me, I thought it was phenomenal. There is one sequence, if you guys are going to go watch it, that's pretty much the best sequence in the film. And from there, I think it slows down after this sequence. I think it's this really incredible, like, long take that's in the beginning of the film. It's amazing, fantastic. So give it a shot. This film was going to be my film club wreck, but I watched another film that was a little bit better, but we'll chat about it when we get there. But for now, let's take a break because we're about to get to some heavy stuff. All right, we'll be right back.
Layered Butter is brought to you by Ola Translation. Raf, do you know any Spanish?
No comprende español.
But if you had Ola Translation, you could comprende español, because Ola Translation is a Spanish translation agency that can help you translate anything you need into the world's fourth most spoken language. Merci. Fourth most spoken, eh? What are the other three, do you think? Three most spoken languages?
I'm going to say Spanish, French, Mandarin.
Yes, I think Mandarin is right. I think probably English is there. I don't know.
Oh my gosh, I forgot English.
Yeah. Anyways, whether you're looking for advertising or you're looking to make a bigger impact in the Hispanic community, or you need documents translated from Spanish to English, Ola Translation offers quick service and competitive prices. Ola Translation is offering Layered Butter listeners 5% off all their services across the board. Just use the code BUTTER. Who doesn't like a deal, right, Raf?
Butter!
Welcome back. So this is our first episode of 2021. One of the big things about New Year's is resolutions. But I wanted to tackle something very, very briefly. It's this idea of, you know, what are some of your hopes, Rodrigo? Or what are some of the things you're looking forward to in the new year? And what do you think may change in the new year? As a general idea of the film world, cinema, TV, and pop culture. What do you think are some of the big things that are going to happen?
I guess, like, if I look at the year ahead and try to visualize what I would be most excited about, I kind of miss big blockbusters. Like, not necessarily going into a movie theater, but it's just, like, some levity and some fun in kind of the media world. Like, it gives you a bit of a break between some of the more heavy stuff. And so, you know, it was an entire year without anything Marvel related. And I feel like I felt that absence quite a bit. Like, I do like kind of having those breaks of watching something that is not going to win an Oscar for best screenplay, but it's fun, you know, and it gets you like in the typical hero's journey with the ups and downs. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing a bit more of that. I hope that's able to happen. I don't know how COVID's going to play out in 2021. And then the other thing is just kind of more of a personal goal. Like, I really want to watch more documentaries in 2021. I kind of ended my year in 2020 watching some good ones on, you know, like the digital media of it all, but I'm hoping that in the future I watch more, because I feel like I go through a lot of emotions with a good movie, but I go through a lot of thinking with a good documentary, and I think I need to do more of that in 2021.
That's awesome, man. I mean, yesterday I watched Crisis Cops, which is about I think it's following two cops that are following the mental health calls, and I think it was really interesting. It was just on TV. I put it on, but yeah, I think that's a great, I guess, resolution for 2021 for the film world. I mean, for me, I miss it. I miss movies. I just hope that, you know, things get better and we don't run out of content, but also we get to experience movie theaters again. So I just hope in the future that we'll be able to experience that all, you know, back together. That being said, this idea of resolutions is something that I really wanted to dig into. There's a couple of things I wanted to tackle. And one of the big things we missed, and I don't think we talked about it yet in any of our podcasts, was Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise had a COVID-19 rant to his crew. And it was recorded by, I guess, a crew member. And he was shouting, yelling, cursing. He was telling the crew, back off. I guess it was two crew members standing really close together. Now, if you guys listen to it, Do you think he's justified in that outburst? It's not like a Christian Bale outburst that he did for Terminator Salvation or, right. Man, what's his name? The guy who did I Heart Huckabees. David O. Russell, he did an outburst with one of his actresses as well. And that was that was not cool. But Tom Cruise, did you hear the audio? What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard without being there to kind of figure sure. out if he's right or wrong. Like, I think a lot of people have easily sided with Tom Cruise because he kind of portrays it as like, you know, there's a lot of jobs depending on us being able to do this right. And I can agree with that part. But it's kind of like, well, I mean, Mr. Tom Cruise, you go home to your mansion and I'm sure you see tons of your regular employees and have them socially distant, but you're chatting, you're having all these conversations. Like, right. not every person has had that experience in this yeah. quarantine. And so I'm kind of apprehensive of citing too much, which with the powerful person berating the regular staff member on set. Like, it is very possible that he's right, that they weren't being as cautious as they should be. But I'm sure there's proper processes to do that. Like, I don't know that you need the movie star of the movie to come yell at you. Like, if I was at my regular job and, you know, like the CEO came and yelled at me, I probably wouldn't be more inclined to keep on doing things properly, right? Sure. So that's another thing. And then it's also just like, I think Tom Cruise is a good actor. I tend to not want to forget that he's also a big part of Scientology.
Right,
and have a lot of issues with that. So it's like, I think it's very easy to conflate loving the movie star and loving the person. And I don't know that those two should be. But again, it's like a lot of assumptions here sure. happening without being there, I guess. I don't know. How do you feel?
I mean, for me, and I was talking to some of my film friends about this, a lot of us were kind of siding with Tom. I think in this idea, it's, you know, it's a livelihood as well. And that's one of the biggest things, right? A lot of these crew members only work one movie a year or they work dailies. And then what if something happens to one of the crew members and then they get sick and the movie gets shut down? I guess Tom Cruise is putting it on his shoulders because he's a major star, but he's also the producer of that film. He is, you know, I guess he's focused on making sure this movie gets made as safely as possible, but also in the sense that they don't get shut down and people don't, you know, lose work over it. So that was my perspective, and I think that was interesting to hear, just through my experience in the film industry and some of my friends who are currently in the industry. They all say, you know what, I think he has a point. I think it's fair. Though, that being said, is it the way you treat another cast member or, sorry, crew member on set? I mean, he could just be having a meltdown, but that's really not the way you should be treating someone on the set or anyone in general. But you know what? I think it's justified in that sense that, you know, he wants to make sure people get keep their jobs and keep working. So kind of torn by it, but I think it also kind of makes sense, right? That being said, Rod, I know we talked about Malcolm and Marie, right? Which was also interesting shot during COVID-19. There's another film that's coming out directed by Doug Liman, another director that Tom Cruise has worked with as well. Called Lockdown with Chiwetel Ejiofor and Anne Hathaway, that was set in the time of the pandemic, shot during the time of the pandemic. Have you seen the trailer?
I haven't, no.
I guess what it is, it's like a romantic drama about a couple that is planning a heist, right? Somewhere in London. What's your take on all these films? And I think this is also my concern is going forward, we're going to have this recurring idea of scripts, TV shows, episodes, and movies that are based upon the idea of the pandemic because it's so relatable to us. Do you think in the future this is something that we're going to see for the next coming year or two? And if so, do you think it's going to get tiring because it's COVID everywhere? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not too concerned about that. It is possible, I guess, that we have so much media dealing with COVID that we become tired of seeing it. But I mean, at the same time, I think like art has an important role in documenting our lives as a society, as humanity. And I don't know, it's like you look at a bunch of period pieces, whether it's like, I don't know, Pride and Prejudice or this
right. Bridgerton
show, and it's like, I don't know that people, like there's some people maybe that don't have any interest in it, but there's a lot of people that watch it and don't get tired of it. Quickly. So I think it might be different when you have some personal feelings towards maybe loss or grief during this time. It might be difficult to watch, but I think there's a space out there for movies or TV or music that wants to deal with the feelings and kind of
emotions,
our situation for posterity. I think there's a space out there for that.
You know, looking back a little bit is I was finishing the season for Fargo, and a half of the season was shot during COVID times. And one of the biggest things I noticed is the lack of crowd scenes, and the blocking between characters and scenes were completely different. And, going forward, if it's difficult to get, you know, big crowd scenes and everything like that, I understand if you're writing a script with a pandemic in as a forefront in your storyline. But what about regular films or TV shows? What if you watch a new season of Better Call Saul and you can't have these big crowd scenes, or even The Walking Dead? You know what I mean? Where there's sequences that are usually really crowded, or lots of background characters, or etc. Do you think it's gonna detach you from the story that these films are presenting?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's definitely a possibility, but that's kind of like, and not that it's like a small thing, right? But it's like, you know, that's kind of where good writers come into play. You have a challenge posed to you 100%. I agree. But as a good writer, how do you write around it, or how do you make up for that, or how do you make it feel that it's still something that's worth watching while having to sacrifice those other things, right? Like, I would imagine it's something very similar to, say, if an actor of a TV show died, or, you know, had to be written out because of some, say, bad behavior or something. Like, yeah, you're put into a corner, but you have to figure out how to keep on moving forward. Like, that is the job.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I think it'll be interesting how the rest of the year pans out and how some of these studios, writers, and directors deal with that sort of problem. It's just something I noticed, and I think it's going to be kind of a norm to see a difference in films and TV shows shot pre-pandemic to, you know, currently in the pandemic and even post-pandemic. Something else that's also going to happen even in the year since the pandemic's still around is that a lot of the tentpoles, as you mentioned, the big budget blockbusters, are now going to be moving, potentially. The first one is Morbius, that just moved to October. And I find that the biggest tentpole that's next is No Time to Die, with a lot of the films that are, I think that might be the second film that's probably going to move, if it does move. And I know a lot of studios are now thinking about releasing their films to a streaming platform. I know HBO and Warner are releasing it simultaneously. But what are your feels about, you know, these moves and the eventual, you know, release of these films? Because the hype of No Time to Die might have died out by now. Do you know what I mean? Black Widow was supposed to come out like a year and a half ago. We haven't gotten it yet. So what's your take on all this pushing?
I mean, I don't know if I've written this narrative in my head for Morbius or
okay, fine. I know what you're going to say. I get it.
But I feel like it's not a good movie. I don't know who, like, is that the perception is that it's not a good movie. And so it's like, I can see why they're like, okay, we'll push this movie forward. No one's going to go die in a theater for this.
Oh, well, right? I know. I meant, like, you know, it's a major film with a major star, and it's, I think it's related to the Marvel Universe. But, you know, they push it because they might lose money on it, right?
Yeah, and so I think maybe it's like, if you, I don't, like, I guess my bigger point is that I think whenever Black Widow or James Bond releases their next movie, you know, like, they're going to be fine. Like, it's unfortunate, and it's like, they should definitely prioritize security or in safety over anything else. And I'm sure they have, like, some economic interest in making sure that they can release it when more people can see it. But they will survive, like, a bit of a lull before getting hype again. I mean, I don't think Morbius would ever carry that hype or ever.
Bye. Fair enough, man. All right. One thing also looking forward to is the status of the film festivals. There's this film festival in Sweden that is sending one person to an island to watch their slate of films for 7 days. No internet. No phone, no anything. It's like the extreme concept of social distancing. Is this what we're resorting to now, Rodrigo, in terms of, enjoying these film festivals. What do you think it's going to look like again?
I mean, I think that's something that is done to get that headline and to get the conversation. I don't know if that's like the new business model for film festivals. No. I do think we're going to have to adapt, right? Like I vaccination is looking like we might be good for the fall.
Yeah.
But who knows, right? Like there's still a lot of the year ahead. I'm hoping that some of the lessons that we learned in 2020 about being able to do festivals digital or in open spaces or making it a bit more open to people who are not necessarily in the city where the festival is held, I hope we can carry some of that forward, even if we're back into a good spot. Because I think it's like, you know, movies are important. I'm a big fan of movies. You're a big fan of movies. And the more that we can open the access to movies, the better I think we will be.
100%, my friend. Finally, you know, looking back at this idea of resolutions and some of the things that, you know, you hope to change or you hope to be in the coming year, I wanted to tackle a quick idea. You know, going out of the box here, one of my favorite actors, Brendan Fraser, and he's a capable director, Darren Aronofsky, they're teaming up for a film called The Whale at A24. And you know me, Brendan Fraser is a superstar. Yeah. At least in the 90s, to be fair. But yeah. I think I wanted to look at and look forward to these ideas of, you know, directors or filmmakers or even actors that tackle a role that's out of their box, that is interesting enough, against their type of films that they make or they do. And going forward, you know, is it worthy enough to get some kind of award attention or revitalize their career? In this case, Brendan Fraser. What's your take on this news?
I'm a big Aronofsky fan. I think I also enjoy Brendan Fraser. I don't know that I enjoy him too much. He has a certain internet cult status. Like I always see tweets or something that's like,
we don't talk
enough about The Mummy. And it's like, we talk far more than enough about The Mummy. Like people say this, we don't talk enough about The Mummy every 6 months. And then suddenly we're back all over The Mummy and Brendan Fraser.
Yeah.
It's cool. You know, like I don't dislike him as an actor. And I think depending on what the movie ends up being, it could be very, very interesting. I do think it might be something fun for him to do. Like, let's see what we can do with this person that's kind of known as like, I don't know, a 90s himbo really is, I guess, the vibe that puts off. And, you know, like, let's see if we can do something different. I mean, hopefully it's a little bit different than his dramatic turn in the Academy Award winning Crash. But I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge Brendan stan. So I'm happy that he's getting work. And I'm happy that he's doing something very, very interesting with Darren, who I think is a very interesting director, especially what he did with Mother. That movie really messed me up when I watched it. I wanted to say too, looking forward as well. I was reading something, David Fincher. I know he was working on the World War Z sequel. And I wanted to tackle this idea of what if you had someone that's doing a type of film and is doing something completely different, like a studio film. So I think David Fincher would have been a really, very interesting take. Do you have any kind of ideas or any kind of, I don't know, hopes for certain actors or directors to work on something crazy or like out of the box? Anything?
Yeah, I want the Christopher Nolan romantic comedy that I do.
I don't think we'll ever get that, buddy.
Yeah. You know who? I always forget his name. What is the name of the director that did The Killing of the Sacred Deer?
Yorgos Lanthimos.
I think him doing anything is different enough that that's kind of, like, I kind of want to see more from him. Maybe even TV. Like, I love when movie people go onto TV and do like a 30-minute, 40-minute thing. I think it's fascinating.
Danny Boyle has ventured out into it, and I think he's been doing great. I think he did Trust with Brendan Fraser. I think that's really cool.
Brendan Fraser newsletter?
Yeah. Save Brendan. There's a petition out there, Save Brendan. But you know what? Let's see how The Whale does in a couple of years. I think it's coming out then with A24. That was pretty much what I wanted to look into. I mean, this idea of resolutions and what 2021 brings and what can change in the future. But let's take a quick break and then we'll get to the film club. Let's go.
Ralph, what do you do when you want to tell a compelling story? Sorry, before you answer, the answer is video. Do you like video? We love video. Video is quickly becoming one of the most important mediums out there. It's a key part of any content strategy, and we have great advice for you. Listen up, Raph. If you're looking for video, go to Big Pig Co. Big Pig aims to produce work that is engaging, different, interesting, and essentially not boring. Who wants to be bored, Raph? Do you want to be bored?
Nope.
Right? So, in fact, they started because they felt that they could create content that wasn't traditional and therefore provided more value to their clients. So if you want to learn more about them, find out more at BigPigCo.com. BigPigCo.com.
.com.
All right, and we're back. So, Rod, I mentioned just before we got into the nitty-gritty, I watched Pieces of a Woman, but also I watched another film called Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always. Have you heard of that film before?
No, but it gives me very much a Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene vibe.
You know, I love Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene. And I also watched The Nest with Carrie Coon, but we'll talk about that another time. But Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always is my pick of the week. This was a film that's very subtle. I think it's an indie film about a teenage girl who is pregnant, and she goes to a crisis center. And it's her story told with her and a friend of hers as they travel to, you know, find a way to give the baby. It's a very powerful film. There are no stars in this film. And it's the first acting role of Sydney Flanagan. And I thought this film was phenomenal for what it was. It's very simple, very subtle, and it has some very awesome sequences. Between this one and Pieces of a Woman, I think Never Really, Sometimes, Always has that profound impact that really lasts. So that's my pick for film club. And Rod, will you promise me to watch this? I mean, you watch some of my films, do you?
Yeah, is it out there?
Yeah, it's out there. I watch it on, at least we have it here in Canada, Crave. So you can check it out and you can let me know what you think.
Yeah, for sure. I watched The Nest, which you recommended last episode.
And?
I liked it. It wasn't my favorite. It was good. It felt like it was good. I feel like, though, Jude Law plays like duplicitous husband a little too well. Like, I think maybe he's a little bit method actor on that one.
Carrie Coon, though. Carrie Coon is magnificent. I love her. She's stunning. So, I mean, this is a tangent here, but her performance in The Leftovers, a shame that she was never recognized. But whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
Go ahead. What?
I was going to say, though, she pretty much, like, the entire show is great, like, for The Leftovers, but she did a lot of good work there, and it's, I don't know, I think maybe, like, the second and third season are a little too weird for the mainstream.
Oh, you're killing me.
I'm just saying, but it's, like, you know, it's kind of hard to get nominated when you're a bit out there, right?
Yeah, I hear you. That's Damon Lindelof for you, but you know what? So Carrie Coon's great, so that's my film club rec. Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always. Give it a shot. Let's take a look at our hot butter take. Rod, what you got for me? Spit it out.
Yeah. So my hot take this week is inspired by two pieces of recent news. One is Alec Baldwin's wife, Ilaria Baldwin, who had pretended to be, I guess, a woman from Spain and then be proven to be a woman from Massachusetts who was actually named Hillary Baldwin, I guess. And
Man.
I don't know if you saw this video, but basically she has like this thick Hispanic accent on, and she's like, how you say a cucumber? Like, she forgot the word cucumber.
Oh, I'm dying.
That piece of news. And also Javier Bardem being cast in this I Love Lucy movie that they're doing alongside Kidman. And the lead actor, Desi Arnaz, is Cuban-American. And, you know, Javier Bardem, who's from Spain, is going to play him. And there's been a lot of this conversation between, like, whether a Spanish person should play him or not. And people were saying it's like, well, he's Latino. And so my take of the week is that if you want to participate in the should a white person play a Latino person conversation, then you need to understand clearly the difference between Hispanic and Latino. And so I will do you all the favor of explaining the difference.
Latino, here we go.
been from Latin America, which includes Mexico, Central America, and South America. Hispanic is a person from a Spanish-speaking country. So Javier Bardem is Hispanic. He is not Latino. I have seen some people out there saying that if you're from a Latin language-speaking country, you're Latino, which means, I guess, French and Romanian people are now Latino. Absolutely not. It's a whole mess. I don't know the, like, I don't want to get into the specifics of whether Javier Bardem should play Desi Arnaz or not. I'll leave that for another day. But just if you're going to try to get involved in this conversation, at least understand that concept. That is my take.
My friend, I still can't get over the Hilaria Baldwin.
How do you say cucumber? That's like Jesus.
Oh my gosh. All right, guys, my hot butter take. I think it comes on the news with Netflix showing their preview for Adam McKay's new film that stars Jennifer Lawrence and Leonardo DiCaprio. I saw a picture of Leo, and it reminded me of how much I think Leo is not a versatile actor. He's a fan favorite. Everyone loves him. I think he's great. But, you know, everyone says he's an amazing actor. All I see is Leo. Whenever I watch a film, I just think, that's Leonardo DiCaprio. That's not, you know, Jordan Belfort from Wolf of Wall Street. Or that's not Hugh Glass from The Revenant. I mean, The Revenant, no, The Revenant, The Revenant was his, I mean, I think that was his best performance, second to What's Eating Gilbert Grape. But then I look back on it, I'm like, it's basically Leo in pain half the time. And he's just like crying and, you know, shriveled up. I haven't seen him disappear into a role where I would say that's not Leo anymore, you know. He doesn't need to pull like a Joaquin Phoenix or a Daniel Day-Lewis where that's Abraham Lincoln I'm seeing on screen, but you know, I think there's something that Leo's missing for me on screen. He's charismatic, I think he's interesting to watch, but I don't feel fully immersed, and I'm waiting for the day he'll prove me wrong. So let's see what happens. I don't know if Adam McKay's new film will do that for me, but let's see. You know, that's my hot butter take for the week. Let's catch up next week. Yeah? Okay. All right, my friends. That was a really busy episode. We got through a lot of topics, you know, we're stoked to have you guys listen in and check us out online, but also with our magazine. And there are coming months when we have new issues coming out. But just some closing remarks. Remember, you guys can always catch us on our socials. My name is J. Rafael Cordero. You can catch me on Instagram and Letterboxd. And Rod, where can we find you?
I'm R. Cockting pretty much everywhere. R-C-O-K-T-I-N-G.
Fantastic. And just a little reminder, my friends, remember layeredbutter.com for all your up-to-date news info, as well as our Facebook and Instagram pages for any more information as well. Ghibli? I don't know. Ghibli pre-order is up, so you guys can jump on that. In addition, remember, Patreon. You guys want a slice of the little layered butter pie, come on by, support us, be a Patreon, and you can see the inner workings of what we have in store for you. Rod, anything else? Am I missing something? No.
No, I think you covered pretty much everything.
Could you believe it? Look at that. Thank you guys for listening. And as always, this is Rod. Oh my God, this is Raph.
This is Rod.
Oh, there he is. All right, guys, we'll catch you later. Thanks for tuning in. Cheers.